all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net.
I am your officer of the deck today, Lieutenant JG type. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses in the government and commercial or corporate marketplace. We also want to thank Eisenhower Center. It's a brain injury recovery center. And in particular, it's after the impact program goes beyond awareness campaigns and state-of-the-art imaging to help veterans, first responders, and athletes. Learn more about EisenhowerCenter.com. They're located in Michigan and in Florida. Thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. Veterans Business Outreach Center, which is located in Flint, Michigan, and covers Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. The center is ran and operated by veterans to help other veterans, National Guard, Reserve, spouses, expand and grow businesses. You can find more about them by going to vetbizcentral.org, 810-252-6200. And now on to our programs. We're going to hear about a particular problem that veterans have at a greater percentage than the normal civilian community, and that is tinnitus, that ringing in the ears. So we have somebody talking to us about the work that they're doing, trying to advance everybody's understanding of tinnitus. And then we're going to talk to a former helicopter pilot who can really relate to the whole problem of tinnitus, because I don't think anything other than the flight line and shooting off artillery gives you more likelihood of having tinnitus once you get out. But I think you'll find both of these stories pretty interesting. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Jason Lewis. Jason is the director of VetsWithTinnitus.org. He's an Army veteran, and we're going to focus on this issue of tinnitus. Jason, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
But let's start with you. You have about 10 to 13 years, depending on how you count it, with the Army, both as enlisted and then coming back as an officer. Tell us a little bit about why you joined the Army.
Well, it's 17 years old and don't have a lot to don't have a paycheck. So good recruiter, got me to enlist the first time, and I wanted to go to college, and it was a good way to pay for it. Of course, I have many, my father and grandfather's both served in the military. So, just one of those natural, things you do. And so that was back in 1992 was when I enlisted the first time. And I was a Stinger missile man, went in as a private and then got out as a specialist and then went to college on the Montgomery GI Bill. And then, got my commission in October of 2001, which was the start of a pretty busy time for the military.
Well, in your area, you went into, I believe, as an officer into civil affairs. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so civil affairs is primarily 90% civil affairs is reserve, but they've got a 10% component that operates out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So we are part of the special forces community. We're not the shooter killers. We're the support, to make sure these guys know once we've gone in, that we, it's not always, you can't shoot forever. So there's got to be a time where we start building. And of course I was in Iraq for 2006, 2007 civil affairs officer. And, that fight ended very quickly, it became a civil affairs fight. Everybody was in the business of civil affairs.
And civil affairs, for those veteran radio listeners who may not be aware, is really that component or unit of the Army that's working with the locals and trying to sort of rebuild government structure and services. Does that sort of sum it up, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, the last thing people want to keep doing is shooting and, you know, and alienating the civil population. So, I mean, that is our primary job, is to really be orchestrators of a lot of different departments like the USAID, a lot of non-governmental organizations, and then also a lot of military units as well that range from Navy, Marine, Air Force, and not so much Air Force, but mostly out of the Navy, Marines. There's a lot of resources, especially when you're in Baghdad and in Afghanistan during the fight.
Well, not only did Uncle Sam send you to such exotic places as Iraq, he was also kind enough to send you to Afghanistan, wasn't he?
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, that package deal, and you know, so yeah, that was a beautiful place to visit. Just wish I could have visited under different circumstances.
So tell us tell the audience what you did in Afghanistan, then, Jason.
Well, we were. I was a team leader, a 5-man team, and we were attached to the 3rd Special Forces Group in the Paktia province of Afghanistan, which is far northeast along the Pakistani border. And so our primary object was to, you know, really the fight was, you know, whenever they decide to attack us. Really, there was a lot of kinetic, but, you know, those are raids and stuff like that. And, you know, civil affairs aren't going to go along on raids too often. But for the most part, we would get deep into the Paktia province with deep valleys, and we would try to influence local leaders, local police, to keep the Taliban from working in their area. And the farther we could push the Taliban back over the Pak border, you know, the better our lives would be, you know, and the better the lives, you know, people could start rebuilding in Afghanistan.
So you served in both those hotbeds that everybody's aware of, and ultimately got out, and it's been about 10 years since you got out of the service. Tell us a little bit about the transition over those years.
Yeah, it was a tough transition. You know, I went to Oregon, so there's not a lot of military bases in Oregon, and so it was, you know, right from hot to cold, and I really wanted to start a home inspection company, and I did. And that was, you know, 2010, and, you know, built up that company and then, passed it off to my business partner. And then we moved to, Honolulu, Hawaii and started a home inspection company there. And it was, we grew it to be the largest home inspection company in Hawaii. And then I sold that. And then we moved on. We're now in Fort Worth, Texas, where life is much more affordable. And I'm doing property maintenance. I have a property maintenance company.
And we often hear these stories, and I think it's good for other veterans to hear it too, Jason, that, you know, you get out of the service where everything was so structured, but now all of a sudden you're not only dealing with, you know, maybe a growing family, changing the business model every couple of years, but you're also working your way through whatever disabilities that may exist because of your service. So talk a little bit about that last piece.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, when I got out, I'm just glad to be out. You know, I'm glad I've got all my toes and fingers or whatever. You know, I know guys are listening right now who came out in a lot worse condition with a lot of disabilities, you know, traumatic brain injury, loss of limbs, and a lot worse PTSD. So, you know, I had my piece of that, and I, whatever degree it was that I have to deal with that. And yeah, I mean, coming back into the family life and, you know, having to raise children, you know, and concurrently you're dealing with, what you did, what you saw over those, you know, whatever the 5-year period that I was deploying and training. And, you know, at first up, it can be, you know, I didn't feel comfortable without a firearm for several years. So I had a concealed carry permit, and I, you know, everywhere I went, I was armed, and I just didn't have that level of security just being in my own country. So, you know, you carry that, and, you know, but I really do feel the VA system, you know, it does have problems, but it is a good one. It's full of, you know, really well-intentioned and competent people. And so, you know, I've utilized those services, and And, you know, I got counseling when I was first out for my PTSD. And so then later on, you know, a lot of the, you know, as PTSD started to, fade, then a lot of, as I'm getting older, you know, I turned 46 this year. So, you know, a lot of the physical aspects to the deployment and the training and the 13 years in the military, you know, are starting to take their toll on me. And of course, you know, our issue today is tinnitus, and that's one I would not have seen coming. Even three or four years ago.
Yeah, let's start there, because I think, again, why don't we explain to people what, you know, I think most folks coming out of the military know what tinnitus is, but why don't you talk to our listeners, what is tinnitus?
Right, so it's also known as tinnitus, and so you can call it tinnitus, tinnitus, but it is a condition that even maybe even 10, 15 years ago was still considered a neuromental issue, so that's something that's going on psychologically, this ringing, constant ringing. It could be constant roaring. It could be a whomping sound. But the problem is it's a constant sound in your ear. And for some, you know, it can vary in degrees. It can be very debilitating. So it is a physical issue, so that it occurs when you have hearing loss. So in the military, a lot of times that happens when we're exposed to very loud sound and whatever. I mean, that, however that is, you're on a flight deck, or if you're in combat, or if you're in a training situation and you're not wearing hearing protection, and that happens enough time, over time, your inner ear is balanced to a degree that if it's upset like that, it will, and I'm not too good in the nuts and bolts of it. But that it will, go, if that inner ear part has been damaged, your body will compensate so that it will run a frequency. And that is tinnitus itself. It is that constant frequency or sound that your brain is generating.
Yeah, it's really an interesting phenomena that it's taken a long time for researchers to figure out that. It's a physical thing. It's not a you're not nuts. You're not crazy. You're not the only one hearing this. It's real. And it can be, for different people, all kinds of different sounds. It may be sound like water. It may be sound like buzzing. It may sound like, you know, sort of insects. It's a, just mm-hmm. a constant, and then it will come and go, but, you know, a constant frequency pitch. Was it your experience, Jason, that the quieter things got, the more the buzzing it seemed to increase?
Yeah, that's correct. You're right. It modulates. You know, it's not like it's the same pitch, the same, intrusion into your life every, you know, moment of the day. It modulates. And that's kind of one of the things I try to point out to people who I talk to and struggle with tonight, that, you know, it's not always, you know, you know, people tend to get focused on when it's really bad. And that time tends to be when you are in a quiet room. Usually when you're trying to go to sleep at night, you know, a lot of people, including myself, will use background noise, whether a fan or whether, you know, I have a Spotify account. I'll hit the nature sound and that'll be my sleep at there.
And that sort of thing just helps you get through the night. It doesn't cure it. It doesn't remove it. It just makes it so that your brain isn't firing and you can fall asleep. Isn't that right?
That's right. A lot of the battle with tinnitus is, and I'm not in the camp that says that there is a cure. Of course, I would be hopeful there will be a cure one day, but, you know, as it is right now, it's just not on the horizon. So a lot of, you know, and they say about 50 million people in the United States are suffering with tinnitus, and we have a lot of big names like, you know, William Shatner, Captain Kirk has been very vocal about it, Huey Lewis, Chris Martin from Coldplay. There's a lot of people, a lot of entertainers, a lot of rockers that are coming on board and talking about their struggle with tinnitus. And, you know, one of the more practical ways is to get a hearing device, and that can help. But for the most part, I mean, those got to come out at night. So having some kind of background sound is a great way to just get your mind focused on something else.
Well, let me back up, because you kind of, you know, you said it, and I want to make sure people think about this. 50 million people suffer from tinnitus. Now, they're not all veterans. It's all kinds of different folks who have this condition. But about 9% of veterans have tinnitus, and about 5% have hearing loss. So there's more veterans with tinnitus than with noticeable, you know, actionable hearing loss. So it's a big population, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's approximately 1.7 million. It's the highest disability claim. It's the disability that gets is the most claimed among veterans, and then hearing loss is a close second. And so also tinnitus often pairs with other disabilities, and particularly PTSD, as well as traumatic brain injury. So you can imagine, you know, if you have traumatic brain injury, and then on top of that, added to that is the discomfort and anxiety of tinnitus. That's becoming a whole population of veterans that really there's not been a classification for that. And that is the veterans, the doctors I've talked to and the Veterans Administration are working on audiology issues are starting to recognize that it's not just tinnitus in and of itself that you say, okay, now I'm diagnosing you with tinnitus, and here's your percentage disability, and walk away. Now the they're starting to institute a pairing of with ongoing mental health issues, so that you're going to get a counselor, just like, you know, as much as you're going to get an audiologist. That's going to be able to help you with the mental distress of tinnitus.
It really goes to a quality of life issue, doesn't it? If you have this constant ringing in your ears, or ringing when you don't want it, like trying to sleep. Talk a little bit about the impact on quality of life.
Yeah. So again, like I said at the beginning, you know, I don't want to compare tinnitus to somebody who has, traumatic brain injury, or somebody who has cancer, or somebody who has. I mean, these are all. These are much more serious issues and that kill you. These are fights for life kind of issues. But tinnitus is a lot like chronic illness, and it's been actually equated to chronic illness in a study that came out last year in Sweden. And so they really liken tinnitus to this. It's the chronicness. It's the, I wake up with this every day. I go to sleep with this every day. You know, how am I mentally going to deal with that? And a lot of people, you know, they found higher rates of suicide across the board, men and women, veterans and non-veterans, with people who have severe tinnitus. And it was equal to the population of those who suffer with chronic pain. So that, you know, not everybody's going to commit suicide. It's actually a small percentage. But that's kind of a bubbling of what, you know, something a lot more problematic, you know, in the population. That if you're not necessarily going to commit suicide, your quality of life is not going to be as good as it should be.
You've mentioned a couple of times that VA will make a determination based on the veteran's statement of tinnitus and rate them, give them a disability rating of 10%. And as I understand it, that's 10%, whether it's one ear or both ears. In to put that in context, and we're talking to Jason Lewis, who's the director of VetsWithTinnitus.org. Jason, a 10% rating gets you, roughly $150 a month for this particular disability. Nobody's getting richer or changing their lifestyle on a 10% rating, are they?
No, I mean, and I have a 60% rating, so I've got. I've got a menu of issues that I've got. And tinnitus, I am rated for tinnitus. Now, I have a 10% rating, so that's actually pretty difficult. You have to have a pretty, bad level of tinnitus to get even a 10%. Most veterans, even though it's the most common disability claim, will get a 0% rating, which is good because that at least gets them in the system and then when that gets worse. So it's, you know, and there's nothing on the horizon that says that, you know, that the VA is going to pay for more severe tinnitus. The only way they pay for is if you have hearing loss, or you have like disfigurement to your ears and damage to your eardrum. That's, from my understanding, that's the only compensation where you're going to go above 10%.
Well, as you mentioned, though, the importance of getting even a 0% rating, certainly 10%, which is the maximum for tinnitus, while it's not a great deal of compensation, it's something that recognizes it. But it also might give you access, or will give you access, to other VA healthcare, like the mental health that you were talking about.
Yeah, and that's where I think they're starting to wake up. I mean, if you go to my website, you can see this old interview with Barbara Walters and Barbara Streisand. And Barbara Walters, this is 85, and she's almost hesitant to even mention the ringing in Barbara Streisand. Of course, she was a famous entertainer in the 70s and 80s. And she even says, you know, I don't want to call you kooky. And so that's only, what, 25 years ago, and you know, or 25, 35 years ago, where you know, people aren't even comfortable talking about tinnitus because it's like talking about a population of people that are seeing ghosts or hearing ghosts that nobody else can see. So there is a long way that the veteran has to come. And, you know, to their credit, they really are closing that gap quickly. And especially with the realization that you cannot just diagnose a veteran with tinnitus and just send them away with $150 in their pocket every month. That tinnitus, you know, especially in the early stages of tinnitus, like the first 1 to 6 months, is where somebody really struggles with it mentally. You know, if tinnitus is not a neurological mental issue starting out, it becomes one because you've got to learn the day-by-day tools to cope with this constant ringing or roaring or whatever you're hearing in your ear.
And that coping mechanism is something that you as the veteran have to come away and understand. But it probably affects the rest of the family, doesn't it?
It absolutely affects the rest of the family. And this is one of the reasons I'm so passionate about the issue is because, you know, if I have a bad tinnitus day, I mean, that makes me irritable. I'm shorter with my wife. I'm shorter with my children. You know, if I had had the tools early on, now I'm in my about a 4-year journey with my tinnitus that I really started to dial in. It became a problem for me early on. You know, it would actually affect my temper. And so it would have been great to have some tools, even to know that, hey, this is going to make you an irritable person and you need to figure out ways that's not going to go, you know, that's not going to come on your family.
You have started, and this is a lot of veterans, fortunately, think about their fellow brothers and sisters when they get out after a while and say, hey, what can I do to help? And you've started veteranswithtinnitus.org and have sort of 3 goals for the organization. Tell us what those are.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really believe we need a greater support network. You know, people just need to talk about tinnitus, and that's sometimes the most difficult thing is to recognize that, hey, this ringing is driving me nuts. You know, for a guy to be able to say that, I've even had radio interviews where the radio host has said, you know, it just feels good to say that. And, you know, that in itself is can be healing. You know, when you've got a community of other veterans and you're saying, hey, you hear that? Yeah, I hear that. You hear that? Yeah, I got it. And you know, and it's driving me crazy. And you know, here's how I deal with it at night when I don't have people around me. And, you know, just sharing those strategies for living with tinnitus. And then a second goal is to have greater recognition by the Veterans Administration, which they're already starting with. But I don't think, you know, enough, it's not well known among veterans about how much the VA is investing in trying to address these issues with tinnitus connected to mental health issues. And they're just starting to connect tinnitus to traumatic brain injury and PTSD, so that you know that tinnitus just it goes across a whole broad population of veterans, and that the VA, and I'm not saying the VA is doing a bad job. I'm just trying to you know, encourage the VA to continue to do the work that they're doing, because I really believe it's going to benefit. And then finally, I think that the military, the powers that be, we really need to find a better system for protecting hearing protection for our soldiers today. And so my experience in both Baghdad and Iraq is that it is impossible to protect your ears because really, and we all have to be monitoring our radios when we're dismounted patrols, when we're in vehicular patrols. We have that earbud in our ear constantly while we're out, and that there is no place for hearing protection. And honestly, even if you could put hearing protection in your ears, you wouldn't do it because you would lose 360-degree awareness of what's going on.
So we really need to, as your third goal, is sort of move DOD along and say you've got to do a better job of protecting the hearing and the ears and the sensory of our veterans on all fronts, whether it's on, as you say, on a flight line or in armor. There's all kinds of different ways in which we assault the eardrums.
Yeah, I mean, they did a really great job with the eye protection, so that you don't dream about, you know, you're not out there because at any second you can get mortared or you can get ambushed in your whatever fight, and you've got your eye protection on. That doesn't inhibit your ability to operate. Unfortunately, with hearing protection, the ear protection does inhibit your ability to operate. And it closes you in. You need to have that hearing so you can hear what's going on over the radio. You can hear what's going on with the guys around you. And it's a tough nut to crack. You know, I know that they've already done research with the bone conducting technology. They had three companies that are ahead in the field. And they did these extensive tests. And even with these three companies, it was very difficult to find a system that they could implement where you're doing, you know, because bone conducting radio monitoring would be the most obvious and easiest solution, because then you could have the ear protection. But even that still doesn't answer the issue of having your ability to be able to monitor the space around you with your ears. And I know they have the Peltors have been around for a while, but you know, they're big and clunky, and really, I never wore a pair of those in either of my deployments.
Well, again, I think the work that you're doing to bring a focus on tinnitus, both inside the veteran community, outside the community, at the VA and DOD, is commendable. Jason Lewis, if folks want to know more about the organization and find out how they can help, can you direct them to some places that they can follow along?
Yeah, really, I'm trying to create a one-stop shop for veterans at www.vetswithtinnitus.org. There's a lot of videos and testimonials. There's VA resources that are on there. There's workbooks that will take you through, programs that help you cope. And these are programs that are already put out by the Veterans Administration that most people don't know about. So there's lots of resources on there, that I'm trying to build this whole site so that somebody who's struggling with tinnitus will feel supported, will have the tools they need. And definitely, I'm small enough that they can always reach out to me. And if somebody's really having a struggle with it, I'm happy to talk to them and point them in the right direction to get help.
Well, I think we all understand the process a little better and what tinnitus is and some of the work that's being done to help improve the quality of life for veterans. After a couple of words from our sponsor, hang on, we're going to talk to a helicopter pilot. And those guys often end up with tinnitus. But in this instance, we're going to talk about his business that he got started after serving. So come on back.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at vetbizcentral.org or call 810-767-VETS.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio specifically today Jeff Kopeck, who's the president of Aldes National North America, which is an NVBDC certified automotive packaging company. Jeff, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Well, I know you do more than automotive packaging. I'm going to let you explain that in a minute. But let's give a little background here so folks understand. You're an Army veteran. Give us the thumbnail of your Army experience.
Let's see. Very quickly, I joined September 12, 2001, right after 9/11. I was in for 14 years. I did 6 combat tours to Iraq and Afghanistan. Got medically retired after that. I was an infantryman and then an Apache pilot. And in 14 years, they told me I was out. So wasn't expecting that.
Well, surprise, surprise. So much goes for the career. But we'll come back to that in a little bit. Just being a little modest, in addition to his service and transitioning from infantry platoon sergeant to combat aviator and pilot, and ultimately an air mission commander, along the way he was awarded 2 Bronze Stars as well as leadership awards for his role there in the Army. After medical discharge, you came back to the Detroit, Michigan area and got involved with the family business. Tell us a little bit about what Eldez North America does.
Well, Eldez North America is a 100% service-disabled veteran-owned business. We're 75%, I would say, into the automotive industry. We're very big in production line services, inventory management and distribution, for example, MRO crib management, custom packaging solutions and design, and we specialize in production build-ahead programs. We're in 7 states, have about 400 employees.
And the other 25%?
The other 25% goes over a range of anything from aerospace to, tons of different things.
Well, and it's, I think, important for folks to know that this is a family business, and it was started, I think, back in 1998. Is that right, Jeff?
Well, that was the original, and then I branched off and started my own business 6 years ago.
And
so there were two.
So is the Eldez North America 100% owned by you, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And as you went about building your own business, tell us what you were thinking about in terms of how to keep moving forward.
Well, like I said, I didn't plan on doing this, but I met up with quite a few people, and I had to figure out what I was going to do. So I did my 5 steps of doing your research, writing a business plan, finding my funding, set up my business, and just doing what I, you know, love and know. And it moved from there.
And along the way, as you started to meet customer needs and find out what customers wanted, what were they asking you about your veteran experiences and status?
Well, they would ask, as a veteran-owned business, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. I didn't even realize. They'd be like, are you certified? And I'd say, yeah, I'm certified. You know, you can go online originally and do your certification, not NVBDC certified. This is in the very beginning. Well, then you find out that anybody can pretty much do that, and it's not a real legit third-party certification. So I met up with Keith King, and he explained everything to me, and I thought it sounded like a great idea because I think that actual veterans that are deserving of this program should be doing this. And it's certified, and it's legit, and the corporations, that's what they're looking for.
Well, and it really has, you've seen it over 6 years, it really has changed what the customer is looking for, not just your word, hey, I served, but somebody else who's really vetted you as a company and said, yeah, there's service here. But more importantly, the veterans involved in ownership and management of the company. Isn't that what the customer's looking for?
Exactly. They're looking for that the veteran-owned company is, you know, that the vet is operational in the company, actually owns the company. It's a process to get certified, and it's a process that's well worth it. I mean, there's no stone left unturned. It definitely sets apart the people who deserve it and the people who put in the hard work and actually are trying to get certified from others that maybe are just doing a different type of certification online or what have you.
Yeah, back in a decade ago or more, it was sort of just a self-certification, and it has evolved over time. And I think as customers began saying, well, we want to help veterans, but we want to make sure that it's really a veteran-owned business, it looked to how it was working with groups like African-Americans, Native Americans, women, and realized there really was a vetting process that should be created, and that's the void that National Veteran Business Development Council kind of filled in. You mentioned Keith King as its founder, but that's kind of what it did. It filled in that void that was missing, didn't it?
Oh, definitely. 100%.
Tell us how long it took you to go through this, because I know it's not easy.
I wouldn't say it's not easy. It's just you have to be prepared. And it's all laid out on what you need. All the documentation, and the documentation is not just you turning it in; it's the NVBDC receiving it from the government. So it's real documentation. It took a couple of months. I really don't remember. It was about 6 years ago, but it took a little bit of time, but it was well worth it. And just like anything else, if you're prepared and you do your homework, you're ready for the certification.
Well, that sounds like an Army pilot. If you're prepared to do your work, you'll get through this.
Exactly.
As you went through this, were other businesses you were talking to, other competitors or colleagues saying, do it or don't do it? What was the encouragement level? Maybe it was from the customers.
I didn't realize until I brought it up to a few of the potential customers that when they heard NVBDC, their eyes just opened. Oh, NVBDC. Well, I knew that it was onto something right there. When you would just say veteran-owned prior to that, and they were like, oh, okay, we have 1,000 of those. NVBDC certified, it seemed like it put you in a different category of a legit certified company.
Yeah, and that third-party certification for all the big companies, all the Fortune 500 and others, that's what really makes the difference, is that third-party certification. But can you tell us about what value you think that NVBDC certification has brought to your company?
Well, I can tell you right off the bat, larger customers are just looking for that. And as soon as you say you have it, well, let me go back real quick. Just saying you have it doesn't really do anything for you. Like I said, you have to have a plan. You have to, know what you're doing and be good at what you do. It doesn't mean you just walk in and get business somewhere because you're certified. But the diversity and inclusion for the procurement practices and the policies of the corporations that are out there looking for it, as soon as you're in that category and they see your certification, I'd say 9 out of 10 times, you at least get the opportunity to quote on business or bid on business.
And Jeff, did you see business opportunities that you looked at and said, well, that's just because I've got the NVBDC certification?
I would say that you have to show your value as the company. And, oh, by the way, I also happen to be NVBDC certified. First, you sell yourself and the company, and then explain what certifications you have.
Absolutely. Well, you've obviously done well in these initial 6 years. There's certainly been some economic hurdles as we're going through now in this country. So every little edge, and not only doing quality work, but every other edge kind of helps, doesn't it?
It definitely helps.
If there's somebody out there
who want to do business with certified NVBDC certified companies. They want to do business. I mean, the diversity and the spend out there looking for these businesses, I mean, it's outstanding. And they know the quality they're getting when they see that certification. They know that not only are you certified, but you have that whole network behind you at the NVBDC to help. Well, any questions you have, I mean, they're just there for...
Well, let me ask, if there's a business owner out there thinking about this, What would be your recommendation on looking into NVBDC?
I would say if you are a veteran, you need to be NVBDC certified. I mean, it's just the opportunities are endless. And as long as you have a solid foundation and a good business and good values, is all it can do is just take you up to the next level.
Well, we want to
give you opportunities that may have not even have been there, that you didn't even know were there.
Absolutely, and we want to encourage others to go to nvbdc.org to check it out. And, Jeff, let's move now on to some additional questions I had for you. How did a nice guy like you decide on the day after September 11th, hey, I'm joining up?
Funny you should mention that. September 11th, we all know, we all remember that date. And I remember I was in college in one of my business management classes and watched it happen. And that whole night, I was listening to everybody say, oh, if I could go over there, I'd go do this or that. And I asked my wife, my fiance at the time, I said, I feel like I need to go do something. And, you know, it was going to be for 3 years. I went and joined 82nd Airborne, you know, but I went and joined the next day. She approved of it, and it was supposed to be just for 3 years. And that ended up going more and more and more. But
and every time you reenlisted, Jeff, you went back to her and said, honey, how's your math? Does it feel like 3 years yet?
She's like, I know, it's addicting to you. I mean, I feel bad. I was gone for half of our marriage and, you know, birth of children and just like all of us. But, yeah, she, you know, I would say the spouses in the military definitely make the soldier or the Marine, airman, like I can go on and on, but.
Amen. You can't do it without your family. Amen.
No, definitely not.
You had an interest in aviation, though, for a long time, didn't you?
Actually, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I loved being in the infantry and kicking indoors. I thought it was the greatest thing in the entire world, and then I became a E7, a platoon sergeant. And then after you go to E8 as a first sergeant, you're kind of not with the soldiers anymore. And I did not want to do that. I wanted to do something where I could still be with all the soldiers because I thought platoon sergeant was the best job in the world. So I just honestly thought, I'll just look for the biggest weapons platform I can put on myself, and it happened to be an Apache. And I put in my officer packet while I was deployed and got selected as one of the older guys. And that's the way it went.
Yeah, that's kind of an unusual move at that point. Did the family have a history of military service? Is that kind of where this started from, or did it all come out of 9/11?
All came out of 9/11. I was the first one in the family.
Well, I've had guests on before who said, and when I joined, my uncles all said, about time somebody paid their dues. tell us, you did 6 combat tours in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Give us a little bit of that flavor.
I was in all the worst places. I was in Afghanistan, you know, the Korngal Valley. When that started up, I was in, you know, Iraq in the initial push pretty much because we were deployed in 2002 to Afghanistan. We came back. And then we had to cover down for another unit like 2 months after we got back from Afghanistan to go to Iraq. And then from there, it just kept going and going and going. Kind of got addicting, I guess. Every time it was, I'm going to get out. But then you didn't want to leave all your soldiers to go without you, so you stayed. Which anybody in the services will tell you the same thing.
That's who you stay for, absolutely. It's not big political slogans or the guy who's the commander-in-chief or any of that. It's really for your buddies.
It is.
Jeff, you were 15 years into this career, and the Army had other ideas. Obviously, that's a tough transition on both sides of the line when you hear what their plans are for you and then afterwards. Walk us through that a little bit.
Well, I remember I was actually out on a flight, a night flight, and I landed. And they said that the doc wanted to talk to me. And to make a long story short, you know, some combat injuries and things of that nature. And they said I'd done one too many deployments and that they retired me out medically at 100%, all combat related. And I was out of the Army in a month. And I was not expecting any of that.
As I say, it's not easy on the soldier mentally. It's also not easy on the family mentally. That first, whether it's a month or 6 months or 12 months, how was the transition?
Well, you lose all adrenaline because the adrenaline's gone from jumping out of planes or flying helicopters or being in combat. So you try to figure that out. Your kids are just staring at you, wondering what's going on with you. You look like a zombie. But then you think, well, you know what? That happened. I can't change it. Time to get things going here, you know, and start doing something to occupy myself. And our company, you know, we have 83% of our management and executive team are all service-disabled veterans. I'd say about 65% of our employees are veterans or disabled veterans. And I figured that there would be a good way to go out and help people that needed help. And they helped me more than I helped them, being great employees and all that. But so that was kind of a goal, and then it morphed into with the rest of the business. But that's definitely what we're always looking for, trying to help any vet that's looking, you know, for a job or needs some help or, you know, not that they all need help. I mean, they helped me more than, geez, we helped them probably. But, yeah, we got a great team.
And part of this is finding that next thing, that purpose, and getting into the work environment and helping with jobs and for veterans and that sort of stuff. Did that become the new purpose?
I don't want to say the purpose. In a way it was, but it definitely complements the business. It makes the business that much better to have camaraderie, the mindset. And I have plenty of employees that are not military at all, and they're all outstanding, just as great employees. But it's nice to have people in different states that their leadership is, you know, a vet, and they're a vet, and they have something in common. There's still camaraderie. So it's nice.
As you moved through this transition, did you find that a lot of the things that you maybe just had absorbed into your DNA in the Army over 15 years translated well into the civilian business world?
I think that's one of the biggest things that a lot of, I would say, maybe potential veterans that are on the fence of trying to get certified need to understand that, yes, all of that does. It all translates over. You know, you need to leverage your military experience. For example, a soldier coming out saying, I was an infantry guy. What can I do? Well, you have a lot of skills that you don't realize. And I help a lot of people with that, too, just like anybody at the NVBDC does. We tell you what your skills are because you just don't know maybe how to explain them in non-military terms. But you have leadership. You have experience in this, what have you. And then they start to realize, oh, I do, I guess. You know, they have to kind of get out of the military mindset, put it into a civilian application, and then move forward.
I also think at times, and let me get your reaction to this, sometimes we in the military can simply assume everybody else has that same set of skill sets. And the most basic one is showing up every day on time.
We just had a talk about that 2 days ago. Yes, there is definitely a difference of, you know, if you're 15 minutes early, you're late. And we've had talks with different employees like anybody would, you know, don't show up 2 minutes before you start. Be ready to go. And then when you punch in, you're good to go.
Another one of those that I always find fascinating, right? You wouldn't think of going into the field without checking your gear. And guys will show up to work in a plant. They won't have their safety gear, et cetera, et cetera. Again, one of those things that's just sort of in your DNA as a military man, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And we definitely assure PPE was a big one. And we'd always have extras, but then we start charging you for it. If you're going to start leaving your stuff at home, sure, here you go. You're going to buy it, and then you're not going to want to buy it again. You know, it's you have to be prepared. And we try to mentor and teach employees, and everybody gets it sooner or later, but it's just not a mindset everybody has, maybe not coming from the military.
Well, as you say, they'll hopefully get there with, you know, what you maybe don't enter the military that way, but if you spend enough time there, they're going to beat it into you, or you're going to yell it into you, and you're going to start realizing, show up early, have your gear ready, etc.
Exactly, and just like I always used to say in the military, I tell all my soldiers or, you know, lieutenants or anything, you know, you always have to stay one step ahead of your commander and two steps ahead of your enemy. And just like I bring that into the business world, you need to stay one step ahead of your customer and two steps ahead of your competition. I mean, everything translates over in a different way.
As a relatively young man, what advice would you give to a young person who maybe is looking at joining the military today?
Advice I would give them if they're looking to join the military?
Yeah, if somebody came to you, a nephew, a niece, a neighbor's kid down the block, and said, "Hey, you know, Jeff, you were in. What do you think about if I join?"
I would ask them why they want to join. And I would see what his or her reasons were for wanting to join, and I explained my experiences, but I am all for it, 100%. I think it's the greatest honor you can have is to be able to serve your country, and I'm all for it.
Well, let me take that same question and flip it around as maybe somebody who's coming out of the service or out of college and is asking for your advice about starting a business in today's climate. What sort of advice would you give them?
Well, for starting a business in today's climate, there's so many resources to go look at for starting businesses. But, you have to assess the opportunities you have. You have to research your market and validate your plan. You have to know where to find funding. You have to complete all your data and see what you're going to do. I mean, you need to study the space that your business is going to be operating in and study it. I mean, study it. You need to know it like the back of your hand. And once you do that, like I say, you have to work hard for what you want. And if you want it, and you work hard enough, you'll succeed.
Well, we're wrapping up our conversation with Jeff Kopack, who's the president of Aldes North America. 15-year career in the United States Army, completing it with being an Apache helicopter pilot. Jeff, let's come back around to the National Veterans Business Development Council, and I'll ask you kind of the same question. If some business person is out there thinking about it, what advice would you give them to the NVBDC process?
The first thing you need to do is, as you've already, I'm sure, stated the website, you go to nvbdc.org, and it can walk you through everything that you need to do. It explains the process to you. It explains the benefits. I mean, you can reach out to me. You can reach out to, I mean, if you just knew everybody that was a part of the NVBDC, you would be, I mean, the hearts and souls are into everything that they do here. I mean, it's by veterans, for veterans, looking out for veterans is what it is.
Here's a little Veterans Day special for you. We're happy to have on Veterans Radio today Steve Overholt, who is the Regional Director of Operations for Mission Barbecue, which has a pretty interesting concept and dining experience. Steve, tell us about Mission Barbecue.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jim. Good to be here with you today. Mission Barbecue, we opened our first location on September 11, 2011, which was the 10th anniversary of the day to change the world forever. We'll never forget. Our mission is to serve. We're committed to support and honor those heroes by giving back to local police, fire, first responders, military charities.
Tell us a little bit about the great food you got there.
Yeah, so our food is all, we have no freezers, no microwaves in our building. We have dry rubbed oak smoked proteins. We smoke our brisket and our pork for 14 to 16 hours a day under the watchful eye of a pitmaster. Yeah, we have 97 locations. Now our 97th one just opened up in Naperville, Illinois. We're in 16 different states.
And the reason we're putting you on this Sunday is to talk a little bit about the specials that you're doing for Veterans Day. So tell us about those.
Yeah, we serve we serve our what we call our heroes every day throughout the country in various ways through Hero Cup sales or working with charities or the military organizations themselves. But on November 11th, Veterans Day, it's one of our favorite days of the year. We get to really say thank you and love on our veterans and active military personnel. And we invite them into our restaurant. We do give them free sandwiches and just share their history with us and our appreciation and our love and support for them.
By them, how do they do that? Tell us about the website and the location tracker.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to mission-bbq.com. That's our website. And you can go on there and find our locations by you.
Well, there you go. Go get a free sandwich from Mission BBQ. I think you'll enjoy it. We want to thank you for listening into Veterans Radio today. We hope you enjoyed the discussion on the tinnitus and how to get a little help and maybe how to build your dream by building a business. We appreciate you listening in today, and we encourage you to go to our website, veteransradio.net. Check us out on Facebook. Send us any programming ideas. Support what we're doing. I'm Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host today. My partner Dale will be back next week. Enjoy Veterans Day this year. Thank a veteran. Remember the sacrifices that have been made to keep this country free, even at this interesting time of elections. And until next time on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.